On this episode of Digital Signage Digest, we will be discussing diversity in the AV industry, especially how encouraging a diverse AV space can be an integral part of industry growth and strength. Later in our program, we'll talk with Khalil Williams of Design Electronics about the company's installation project at the Hamilton Exhibition in Chicago.
The network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is Digital Signage Digest, Episode 6, Diversity is Progress.
Support for AV Nation is brought to you by Peerless AV, driving technology through innovation.
I'm Lenore Aline, and this is Digital Signage Digest, the AV Nation TV show that looks at the news and issues of the digital signage market. With me today is Charmaine Turella, Service Account Manager at Varex and Chairperson for the AVIXA Diversity Council, and Kevin McLaughlin, AV Manager, Royal Society of Medicine London, and Director at AV User Group, as well as AVIXA Diversity Council member. Welcome to the show. It's terrific to have you both with us.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
In the current global climate, where we all seem connected by the virtue of the proliferation of communication technology, the issue of diversity has taken on greater importance, especially when discussing who will participate in the expanding global economy. Charmaine recently addressed this issue specifically in the AV industry in a recent profile on avnetwork.com, while back in March, the UK branch of AVIXA's Diversity Council held its inaugural event, Diversity and Inclusivity in the Audiovisual Industry, What We Can Do to Create Change Now. Before we dive into the specifics of this issue, can each of you tell me how you got into the AV industry? We'll start with you, Charmaine.
Oh, well, I got into the AV industry through the IT industry around the time of the financial crisis when people were hurting and traveling less. So instead of doing face-to-face meetings, clients wanted to do more video meetings and they needed more video integration rooms. So I was dealing with just selling telecom event services, webcasting, web streaming. Mostly, and through those clients, I decided to work for an integrator, one of the top five integrators for the last couple of years, and just started doing integration.
Well, your role with Varex is a service account manager. What does that role entail for that company?
That role is mainly dealing with the day two support for integration. So, you know, I was very accustomed to dealing with the day one, how to design, implement the integration. But now clients are in a bind about day two. You know, how do we support after it's done? Who supports it and when and how often and in what capacity? So there's a real need for that right now. Varex is definitely hitting and applying for that need and supporting that. So that's what I do right now.
Okay. Kevin, how did you get into the industry and what's your current role for you?
I got into AV by accident, as so many people do in this industry. In London, I was working in a hotel. I dabbled in AV and it just so happened I saw a job advert in what we call Job Center here, which is I think it's all gone online now, but basically you go in and just look at what jobs were available. And one said audiovisual technician. And I thought, that sounds interesting. And I went and asked about the job and they said, if you can answer one question, you can proceed to interview. And they asked, what does OHP stand for? So I was like, I know that. And they said, you may proceed to interview. And then I got the job here at the Royal Society of Medicine and progressed to senior technician and then AV manager. And so we support all the AV users on site for what is conferences and meetings for medical professionals. And it's a charity and it's dedicated to the further education of medical professionals through CPD points. So that's continuous professional development. And so we have auditoria, small meeting rooms, flexible spaces, and there's 9 of us in the AV team here.
Terrific. At what point did you first notice or experience that there was a lack of diversity in your work environment and or the industry at large? And how did that make you feel when you discovered that, you know, things could be a little bit more diverse, either racially or in terms of physical abilities, et cetera? Kevin, you can take this one first.
Okay. I think from recruitment is the most obvious applications for roles that we had in the team were 95% plus male. As for sort of ethnicity of the applicants, being in London, that wasn't such a problem. But I think from gender point of view, it's always been an issue. And I think as soon as I went to my first AV show, I was, soon realised exactly what the diversity situation was in the industry. And it's because, you know, everybody looked like me, basically.
Charmaine, how about you?
Oh, as soon as I got into it, actually, right in the entry, it's like 2010, I was the only one of my kind.
Yeah.
And for the most part in the IT industry, there was time I was the only one of my kind on the team, meaning either a minority of any kind of ethnicity, and also just a woman. IT had changed more rapidly. There were more women when I left, but when I went to AV, not only were there really a lack of women, but there really was a lack of ethnicity, a huge lack. Here in the States. So you go to shows and I had a colleague at one time say to me, "You must feel bad." I said, "Why?" She said, "Well, because you're the only one here at this show." And I looked around and that's the first time she made me notice how much there's like, she says, "There's no one else like you. You are the only," just like maybe the person, but you're the only minority here.
What do you guys feel is the reason behind that? I mean, we can talk about our minorities and women. Are they not applying for these roles? Is it a thing of this is not an industry that attracts those groups of people, or is it something? Or is it a combination of that and the industry seemingly not open to hiring outside a specific set of people, gender-wise, ethnic-wise?
All of the above? So, if this was a multiple choice question, I would say all of the above. So mainly, you know, what I noticed, what I had to learn about the industry is how it started. You know, it started from a niche gentlemen who were roadies, who were used to doing audio integration, that started their own business company, and, you know, the commercial business decided, oh, they needed this too. And it became a thing. And they started a business. And they were accustomed to hiring people that looked like them, hiring the guys that they worked with on the road that they knew. That's what they did. Now, over time, of course, AV grew, changed, but they still kept that custom, that tradition. That was one thing. They definitely did not open the doors for others or to pool for recruiting other people, because in their mind, they're the only ones that can do this. And that wasn't really accurate. So now, fast forward to today, you have people coming from other technology sectors, telecommunications, cable, Verizon, Optimum, you name it. Those same gentlemen and ladies that can terminate cables and deal with IPTV. That's what we need in our industry more. That's a thing. And they can also do other types of integration. So people tell me today, oh, we don't have people, a lot of minorities that are qualified. They are. You're just not looking in the right pool. Mm-hmm. And also, you're not looking at the other characteristics and attributes they have that can also help your business to the next level and get more opportunities and different opportunities. So
this is a thing also of just translating skill sets to just expanding the possibilities of the industry itself by also expanding the skill sets required and being a little bit more creative about what can be pulled into the industry skill-wise.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have to be more creative, because if the AV industry still just recruits the same old type of skill set, it's going to die a quicker death.
Yeah.
And they are seeing a lot of other sectors like IT taking on AV because they're expanding, and they're saying, okay, we can augment our talent and expertise. Let's take on AV as well. Let's take on this. And they're keeping their business momentum going. So yeah, it's very vital to, you know, the survival of the AV industry as we know it, to look and expand and translate different skill sets into our industry.
Kevin, you guys hosted, the AVIXA Diversity Council hosted an event in March this year, addressing diversity and inclusivity in the AV industry. What were some of the initial steps that you guys addressed, you know, brought to the table to kind of diversify AV, specifically in Europe?
Well, I mean, the event itself was very well attended, and it gathered a lot of interest. And I think really it was more about starting the conversation, raising awareness than actual action that's being taken at the moment. So I think we're still at that stage of raising awareness. And I think everybody realized that we need to advertise, market the AV industry a lot better. And get it out there to students at an early age, and make them realize exactly how exciting the industry is. Because I think there's some kind of disconnect between our industry that takes place well before we're putting out jobs for recruitment. Because if nobody's applying for those jobs, then that means the pool doesn't contain that diversity. So it's how we create a diverse pool. And that's got to go back to education and students. And I think recently there was some activity with video conferencing for global learning, which is a group here in the UK. And that basically connects experts with students. And so I believe the guys from the AB team at Nomura, the people at Shaw Electronics, did a video conferencing to several schools and talked about the industry and how exciting it is and as a career to look forward to. And therefore, students then would get into the right subjects. Because obviously, AV professionals come from quite a sort of disparate source when it comes to education subjects, degree subjects, because there's not many specific generalized AV courses out there.
Mm-hmm. And on the state side, just to tag on to that, so what we've done on the state side in terms of activity, we have an education committee, basically a couple of people who have done a curriculum that's actively being used in Lincoln Tech in New Jersey, which we do tech tours here with the students. They've come to Verix to tour the facilities to learn more about what they're learning in school and how it applies to learning, and also get takeaways as to other types of certifications they should get. Now, we started that last year, September of 2018. We've done 1, 2, 3, 4 different tours. Atlantis Partners is another partner that did a tour with the students. VCA Global also did that tour. And from that particular class of 22, the 10 out of 22 were already gotten hired. Got hired by VCA, a few got hired by other companies, and three of them recently just received their CTS. A couple more just received their certification in programming. I won't name which partner because we're trying to be agnostic. A few more have gotten their Dante certifications as well. So they are those additional that class are looking at internships And that's all from the education committee and the work they've been doing here. And also crossing the border and working, you know, alongside with Kevin to get those tours going, to start speaking to the schools and get them and integrators and partners to help take some of those students on. So far, 10 out of 21, not so bad.
Not a bad, bad enough.
Being a year.
No. I think a question that would be interesting for both of you to ask on a personal level is, you know, diversity as a topic is such a prickly one for some people, how people view diversity in the current political climate in America is quite challenging because some people just feel like it's not an important issue or we've done this before with affirmative action, et cetera, et cetera. What's the reception been like for each of you in one raising this as an issue within the industry, and what's the feedback you've been getting, both negative and positive?
Well, I'd say that in the UK, it's been predominantly positive. Everybody seems behind it, recognises it's something that needs to be talked about and action taken to improve diversity in the AV industry. I mean, I read with interest some of the responses to magazine articles in the US. There was quite a pushback, as if it was some kind of attack on the white male. But, you know, it's I mean, that is the whole thing we talked about in Orlando at Infocom about unconscious bias. And it's just when you're sort of your way you see the world is challenged, and some people tend to push back rather than open their minds. But I think in the UK, the response has been fantastic, and it's actually revealed a lot that was going on that I didn't realize, you know. So it's brought some stories out, and hopefully we can reveal some more of those in future events. Various organizations already had apprenticeship schemes that were reaching out to areas that were more deprived than others, and different, you know, had different backgrounds. So actually, it's all been really positive in the UK.
How's it for you, Charmaine?
Wow, how do I describe that? In the US, it's been quite interesting. It's a roller coaster. Mm-hmm. So I'd say sometimes there's its ups and sometimes there's its down, and it's a hell of a ride. So basically, 50-50 negative, 50 positive, I would say 50-50. Really? Sometimes the negative teeters more 55 and then 45.
How is that presented to you? How does that come at you? Is it verbal? Is it written? Is it just resistance to suggestions?
It's a lot of things. So the main top ones I'll name, it's either a direct resistance to what's the point of our council in the first place. Why is it here? You know, you're not, you know, there's not enough qualified minorities, and arguments that are not substantiated. So substantiated arguments as to why the council doesn't belong. And then you also have people who are resistant, who they say they want to support but not really, or they try to utilize our council for the wrong purpose or for their own personal gain. Mm-hmm. So you get that as well. Also, resistance to me as chair sometimes occurs, right? So you're the chair of this council, okay? We're still going to go out to someone other than you, if we can get help with your regards to your counsel, or go around and circumvent me altogether. So that does happen. Just those are the tops. Those are the top things that happen. So very different experience from what Kevin experienced in the UK, of course. but yeah, it's very much, like I said, the roller coaster ride, but you have to ride it. And you have to fight it. You know, my daughter is biracial. Many people don't know that. And so her you know, she has a father who's not necessarily a minority. So I always tell her there's still always going to be a fight in because of diversity, no matter what generation, millennial, it's not over yet. You still have a constant work to do, and it's never going to end.
Oh, it's not. It's nowhere near over.
It's nowhere near over.
Obama did not solve this problem. So with the AVIXA Diversity Council, which is relatively new, what are some of the future plans that each of you have in your respective areas coming up that would push this agenda a little bit further and get more people involved?
Well, in the UK, I'd say that what we need is more people to get involved, because although the events have been well attended, the response to magazine articles has been fantastic, we're not getting very many volunteers, you know, and what we need is diverse members of the AVIXA Diversity Council here in the UK to lead the way. We do have a networking event planned in October, and hopefully be able to reach out to a more sort of diverse audience for that. And we've got big plans for ISC for an event in the afternoon on the Tuesday there, followed by a networking event as well. And hopefully that will really be high profile.
Charmaine, what do you have on the US side that's coming up, and how do you plan to expand the purview of the council?
Oh, a lot of things. So at Infocom, at our council's meeting, I had a challenge for the AV industry. Basically, one of the clients who talked to me during Infocom said, I'm not going to support your council because I don't believe the industry or AVIXA is really behind diversity. Infocom, and I don't really see a lot of diversity still, except for what you're doing. And I said, you know what? I can't argue with that. I said, I know it's going to take time, but I said, you know what? Yeah, we have to really make a call to action. So I made that call to action during that meeting. And the good news is a lot of the other councils definitely have stepped up. Now, the Women's Council has been supporting us from day one. So I have to say thank you to them, because all the different chapters have kind of, you know, done some joint events with us, and they've made a real effort in helping us with our goal, and then in turn, you know, sharing, you know, some of their support in order to get us off the ground, since we're the newest council. Mm-hmm. The other councils are now, after this call of action, starting to jump in and help. So we're going to do more joint events, one that we're going to do with the Young AV Professional Council. We realized that young AV professionals and diverse professionals in AV have a common denominator as to what they experience in the industry, right? They experience similar things, people not believing in their expertise, their skill, and people pretty much disparaging them because of who they are, because they're young and they don't feel their experience enough. So we're going to work with them a little bit more. Also, we have manufacturers that have been very strong in helping us, and Kevin could attest to that too, because they supported him so greatly. And I want to say Shure, you know, we thank Shure because of one of the manufacturers. There are others that probably can mention that are supporting us and are amping up the support. So we're doing that, working with them for venue space so we can get more global presence and global reach. And in addition, more events, and we're ramping up the education and mentorship that we're providing to help a lot of the young AV professionals who are diverse get work, get the training they need, so that when they do start an AV position, their employer doesn't have to worry about a capital investment in getting them trained up. They're already trained. And good news with the students that I mentioned at Lincoln Tech, they have the jobs, they're already trained, and they're taking off and they're just growing as we speak. So that, as well as more communication. The thing is communicating more of what we're doing, because this council is a very activism type of council. We do things. We do market. We do communicate, as Kevin says. But we also do a lot of working with people, institutions, schools, doing tours. We are very active in making this initiative happen and pushing the agenda and the conversation, especially with those who resist us. Mm-hmm. We're working on this year as well. We're working mostly with those who resist us and educating them as to why diversity is important and how it can help their business. That's the biggest education that needs to be had.
Beautiful. Well, here's a kind of utopian question to bring our conversation to a close. How does diversity strengthen the AV industry? And what does a diverse AV industry look like?
Well, I was reading an article today from the Bechtu magazine, which Bechtu is a union here for broadcast and CISA. And they are actually have launched diversity initiative recently, which is it's really good to see. But they talked about how diverse leaderships, organizations with ethnically diverse leaderships outperform their peers by 33%. So I think that says it all in that one statistic. And I think, I mean, what does it look like? It looks like society, as diverse as society is, you know, and I personally would want to work in a diverse organization. You want different ideas. You want diversity when it comes to talking about projects, meetings, the way we work. I mean, who wants to do the same thing over and over again, see the same faces and have the same conversations? Not me. So, you know, that's what I see.
Charmaine?
Well, what does diversity look like? Everything. It's a mosaic. So in the council, we have the term mosaic. We use that a lot in our council. It's a mosaic. A mosaic is just different shapes, colors, sizes that come together to make this beautiful picture and beautiful design. So it's not just Black and Latin and Asian and African. It is mental disability. It's physical disability. It's LGBT. It's everything. It's veterans. That's a mosaic. When you put all of that together, that is a mosaic. That's what it should look like. So, and the interesting thing is, our first council meeting was at Infocom last year. And that's discovery was made then. You know, we did this exercise, and after we had some discussion after the exercise, you know, Kevin said, well, what about the invisibles? That's when I first met Kevin. And he's smiling because he remembers. And I said, that's right. And we were in the room with everyone. We're like, yes, the invisibles, absolutely. They are part of diversity. Hearing impaired, absolutely. Vision impaired. Because we take that for granted as well. You know, at any point in our lives, any one of us can become impaired in some way, physically or mentally.
Absolutely.
That is something we don't think about until maybe too late. So it's something we have to think about, and also something we do in our business, right? We design rooms that are compliant, people who are impaired. And the funny thing is, in our industry, we don't take them on as much as we should into the industry. Although that's part of our work, to know how to do this. We don't take them on as much. So that's another thing. That's part of diversity.
Well, thank you both for joining us today on Digital Signage Digest. Where can our listeners find you, Charmaine?
They can find me on LinkedIn for sure if they look me up. My email address is charm.mylastname@gmail.com or my Verix email address, which is cmylastnameatverix.com.
Beautiful. Kevin?
I'm on LinkedIn too, and I do enjoy Twitter quite a lot, and I can be found there on Kev_McLaughlin.
Kevin's actually been helping me get my Twitter game up quite because I was never on Twitter before.
Oh, I struggle every day. So I understand your struggle. Well, thank you both. This has been such a beautiful conversation. I appreciate you both coming on to discuss what is a delicate and sometimes difficult subject for our industry.
No, thank you for actually doing this, having this conversation. And that's another thing we want to thank you guys for for even doing that, because this helps us as well. This supports us a great deal. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Hamilton, an American musical, made its debut on Broadway in February 2015. Its stunning success has seen the critically acclaimed musical open in major cities around the world in subsequent years, including in Chicago, where it made its debut at the CIBC Theater in September 2016. To expand on the historical themes explored in the innovative play, Hamilton the Museum exhibition opened in Chicago this past April, presenting a technology melange of art, history, drama, and education to underscore its musical counterpart. With us to discuss the project is Khalil Williams, CEO of Ontario's Design Electronics. Welcome to the show, Khalil.
Thank you.
So, you guys have a lot of experience with museum exhibitions. Can you first tell us what was the impetus for the creation of Hamilton, the museum exhibition? How long ago was it planned out?
I believe it was conceptualized with the creator, Lin-Manuel, probably many years in advance. I know that his vision was to add historical context to the blockbuster Broadway musical. After seeing the musical myself, I was really impressed with it and blown away. And it was quite amazing that they were able to build an exhibition that is right on par with that experience.
You actually got tickets to Hamilton? You actually saw the play?
Yeah, I was lucky to see it in New York. Really consider myself fortunate for that. So it was a great experience.
Awesome. Design Electronics is a veteran of museum exhibition installation projects, including King Tut and the Lady Diana exhibit. At what stage did you guys come into the production process of the Hamilton exhibition? And what was your brief for the exhibition creation space?
Yeah, so this one was quite interesting and unique. There was another company involved prior to design, and they had an original opening date of November 2018. That opening date was changed in addition to the company that was going to move it forward from a production standpoint. So we were brought into the situation as a kind of a late stage contract award. We were brought in around August 2018. The balls were already moving ahead with certain things in fabrication, and a lot of the physical design of the space was already laid out. So with that being said, with a late stage contract award and you have a deadline to work with, we had to be very flexible and agile in, you know, A, working with the customer's budget, but B, developing a design that would work with things that were already built that weren't really going to change.
Right. This is in a warehouse, right? The exhibition has been designed within a warehouse space.
Yeah, so it's actually a 35,000 square foot semi-permanent building. They referred to it as Hamilton, and it's a very ambitious project when you consider that typically when we're doing museum work, we're moving into an existing space and we're figuring out how to work within the museum's given galleries, their fixed infrastructure, power, things like that are already all sorted out. With Hamilton, you essentially are building an entire building, a massive, the only way to describe it is like a massive airplane hangar, and then bringing in all of the infrastructure inside of it and turning it around so that when a guest walks through it, it looks like it's been there for quite some time. So it was a very ambitious effort on behalf of that team to even conceptualize and then bring this to reality and then to work within that environment. As you can imagine, things are moving in multiple directions at multiple different times. So it was a very interesting project for us to be involved in.
The exhibition is a dynamic and interactive mix of lighting, sound, multimedia, music, and educational tidbits. Can you tell us a little bit about what the multimedia AV integration process was like? What was installed? What was its function? And how does it bring the whole exhibition together?
Yeah, so we're blending, as you mentioned, show control, which includes lighting control. In this particular exhibition, we also have integrated audio guides by RSF. What was unique about that is you're blending background audio that's installed in the ceilings at a distance with audio that's on off-the-ear headphones. So a lot of the narration would be triggered automatically when you'd walk into a given space within the exhibit. And then there would also be audio guide interactives that you could look at and point and click and hear the narration to go along with the accordion artifact. So that was a unique blend, and it created a really interesting soundscape. We had the mandate of not having any visible speakers. So the request was, I don't want to see the audio, but of course I want it to sound good. So we were able to solve that problem with Bose EdgeMax speakers in the galleries. It was the first time we've used them in this application. They have extremely wide dispersion angle and even SPL coverage. So in several of the galleries, we were able to put them in the corners, have them painted, built into the set fabrication, not be visible, and sound really good. So we were able to make to reach that objective for the client to a point where you don't really know where the sound is coming from. The projection was all done by Barco. We worked in conjunction with Barco. We have Barco F90 4K13 projectors and Barco F70 projectors. We use the F70 because it's quite a robust chassis. For this particular one, we had to hide the projector inside of a crate. So it looks like you're on the shores of St. Croix, and when you walk in, there's a crate hanging from the center with a projected image of a map onto a wall. So the projector is completely hidden, mounted vertically, and of course there's some airspace constraints and ventilation requirements that go along with that. So the F70 is really our go-to projector when we have kind of what I refer to as a mission-critical installation.
These visual components, this is a digital signage podcast first and foremost, but these visual elements that you integrated, what are they showcasing? What aspects of the musical are they showcasing, and how many are throughout? I believe there are three galleries that you guys created within the space.
Yeah, so there is actually four projection experiences per se. The intro theater, I believe it's approximately a 4-minute intro video with Lin-Manuel. The video was done by Cortina Productions and extremely engaging video where you walk in to a dark room. There's a fabricated scroll and it's painted. It looks very much like a giant scroll in the middle of somebody's imagination. It's 20 feet wide by 10 feet tall. Onto that, we're edge blending two Barco F90 projectors on there. And that creates early engagement. It puts some context around what the user is going to be able to expect as they go through. It sets the objectives essentially for what will you learn in going through this, where and why does it have value. And what I really like about that video is at the end of it, the theme is who lives, who dies, who tells your story. So it talks to the guest as to what are you going to leave behind? What is your legacy? Which is really something that Alexander Hamilton did, incredibly well. As you move out of that intro gallery, this is where we have the St. Croix projection map next. And then we worked with a company named NGX Interactive, who put together a really unique interactive projection mapping table. And this table tells you the Battle of Yorktown. There's moving figurines on it that are projection mapped from the ceiling inside of a replica of a tent. So the engagement on that piece, the immersion level is extremely high. It was about a minute and a half experience to tell the Battle of Yorktown. Again, that's integrated with the audio headsets as well as some unique components like bass shakers inside of the tent. So then the cannons fire, it feels like you're very immersed in the experience. Moving on from there, we have a 3D theater at the finale. There's a 24-foot screen with a passive experience with 3D glasses that go in, and there's a 5-minute trailer essentially to end your trip through the exhibition. So it really leaves people on a high note as they walk out of that space.
Were there any, we know that the most significant challenge was actually creating this hangar-like exhibition, but were there any other challenges you faced with the environment, both inside and outside of the built environment for the exhibition?
Yeah, just going back to the original concept for this being built inside of a semi-permanent structure, when the deadline changed, the opening date changed to the following year, we had the luck of being on Northerly Island, and we're in the months of January and February. So you're definitely dealing with the environment. There's no heat inside of the facility. We have to consider all of the things that sensitive electronics like a dust-free environment. And in some cases, it very much was a construction site, very close until opening. So things really did come down to the wire. That created a lot of unique challenges to how we build and test and certify, bring things to life without jeopardizing the integrity of the systems. And our rack room, for instance, just happened to work out so that it was right near the loading dock. So we still had lots of things coming in, walls not necessarily built yet, that we had to work around. And in show business, as they say, the show must go on. So we had to make those deadlines, and it created a lot of unique challenges. But we had a good team, a multifaceted team that we were working with, including everyone from the general contractor to the production company, IMG. So we were able to pull things off.
How long is the exhibition going to be up for? I know it opened in April. What's the intentional length of the showing?
As I understand, it may potentially tour to other cities. I believe the original intent was for it to go to the next city that the Traveling Broadway show is doing well. And it was held over in Chicago, I believe, for an additional year now. So it may very well continue on in Chicago for an extended period of time. However, I do not know what the next location is for that.
And if it does travel, will you be in charge of, will your team be involved in setting that up wherever else it goes?
Yes. So typically, as we do traveling museum exhibitions, we're involved in the teardown to ensure that things are disconnected properly and transported safely to the next site. And then we will work with local labor to get it set up in the next location, program, commission it, modify it as necessary if anything changes with the environment. The cool thing about this exhibition is, conversely to having to go into a new museum with a different layout, the layout very much should remain the same because the plan is for the entire structure to pick up and move to the next location.
So the entire kind of warehouse setting, the same, you can probably keep the same size and layout and so on in the next location.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So with this first iteration, how do you think the project, your integration of lighting and video and all of that reflect and enhance the play itself in line with what Lin-Manuel wanted, his vision from years ago?
Everything was done to a very high standard. The fabrication by ID3 in Atlanta is the best fabrication I've seen in my career experience. And I think that runs in tandem with the Broadway musical. So when you're able to visually engage someone and then also have the audio there at that same level, I believe, and from the feedback that we've received from guests, it's a very engaging experience for them. So I do believe that it delivers in tandem with the Broadway musical, which is saying a lot because, mm-hmm. as you know, that has been sold out, I think, for longer than any other Broadway musical in history. So it's a tremendous feat. And I think the exhibition really speaks well towards having that maximum impact and experience that when you go to see it, you leave a little bit differently than you went in. And that's one of the most important things about that I find rewarding with museum exhibitions is being able to be a part of that, being able to help and facilitate telling that story.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Khalil, for joining us today on the podcast. Where can our listeners find you?
You can find us at www.designelectronics.net, and I'm also on LinkedIn under my name, Khalil Williams.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm Lenore Eileen, and you can find me on Twitter at LenoreDSM. For AV Nation, visit our website, avnation.com. You'll find this show and a host of others. While you're there, please visit our supporters section. These are the companies that support us financially and help us bring you Digital Signage Digest, coverage of DSE, Infocom, and more. All that and more at avnation.tv. That's avnation.tv.